We're going to embark on a short series of one of my favorite stories and favorite books of the Bible, the book of Ruth. Ruth is one of my favorite stories because it gives a beautiful and practical picture of redemption. In Ephesians 1:7, we read, "In Him, being Jesus, we have redemption through His blood, the forgiveness of sins according to the riches of His grace." So we're going to see redemption, especially in chapters 2, 3, and 4. We're going to touch on it tonight, but really we're going to get into the meat of redemption in the coming times as we look at more chapters of this wonderful short story. Redemption in the Bible in the Old Testament was a word that means buying back, that if someone was in debt, someone else would come and pay that debt to buy them back. If someone was in trouble, another person could come and rescue that person to clean away their debt or make right the trouble that they had gotten into. That's what Jesus has done with us. In that verse in Ephesians, in Him we have redemption. Why? Because our sin created a major gap between us and God. It separated us. And Jesus, through His blood, dying on the cross, paying our ransom, has redeemed us, has brought us back, has bought us back. And we're now His. And we see such a practical illustration of that in this short story. The story shows also God's hand of providence to work as He weaves His kindness into the lives of Naomi, of Ruth, and Boaz, the three stars of this short story. This book focuses on three ordinary people. That's another reason I like it. They were not kings or judges. They were not important. This is really a brief story into the ordinary lives of Jewish people and one Moabite. Now, the only thing that ties them possibly to greatness would be that we see later on that they get tied in with the lineage of David. And for New Testament believers, that's the lineage of Jesus. But these were ordinary people. These were simple people, a simple life during the period of the judges. And yet we see the hand of God at work. We see how He cares for His people, great and small. The book of Ruth is broken up into four chapters, and it reads a lot like a play. So we could almost say it has four acts or four scenes. Scene one, the introduction of Ruth and Naomi and the calamity they face. It ends on a bitter note where we are left to wonder how God is going to bring good out of their calamity, how He's going to fill their emptiness. And then scene two, the hero, Boaz, is introduced, and we see him and Ruth meet and interact. Now scene two ends on a hopeful note because it is revealed that Boaz is not only a godly man, but also he's a kinsman redeemer. Scene three, Ruth asks Boaz to be her kinsman redeemer. In other words, she basically asks him to marry her. But this scene ends on a cliffhanger because there's another man who has the first right to redeem or marry Ruth. So we're left wondering if Boaz will be able to marry Ruth and how this story is going to end. Scene four, Boaz marries Ruth. Redemption is achieved, and Ruth has a son which fulfills the hope and brokenness of Naomi. The book ends with the following words. Boaz begot Obed. Obed begot Jesse. Jesse begot David. And I have to wonder if there was a Jewish reader when this was written or when it was being told in audible form. And then, you know, it's about these few people and they might not know who they were. And then suddenly at the end when they say, you know, Obed begot Jesse, they're going, wait a minute. Then Jesse begot David. Wait, King David? Obed was David's grandfather, which means Ruth and Boaz was the great-grandfather. Naomi was the great-great-grandmother. And why is that so significant? Because to the Jewish reader, David was the picture of hope and peace. He was the first good king of Israel. He followed Saul. But to us as New Covenant readers, David's kingship is just a picture of the King of heaven and earth, King Jesus, who would come and redeem his people. So, if you can't tell, I love this story. And I'm going to use that word story. I remember hearing from someone one time that they didn't like the word story because they thought it kind of usually means fictitious. I'm going to use it because this is a story, but it is absolutely true. So if you're here and you kind of associate story with fiction, you know, just understand at the forefront, I'm going to use that word story, but I mean it as this happened. This is a narrative. This happened. This is a true story. So let's, without further ado, let's read in Ruth chapter 1. I'm going to just read the first five verses. I thought about reading the whole of chapter 1, but for time's sake, we'll read little bits and pieces at a time. We'll kind of separate this in three different sections as it's kind of how chapter 1 goes. So chapter 1, starting at verse 1. Now it came to pass in the days when the judges ruled that there was a famine in the land. And a certain man of Bethlehem, Judah, went to dwell in the country of Moab, he and his wife and his two sons. The name of the man was Elimelech, and the name of his wife, Naomi. And the names of his two sons were Mahlon and Chilion, Ephrathites of Bethlehem, Judah. And they went to the country of Moab and remained there. Then Elimelech, Naomi's husband, died, and she was left and her two sons. Now they took wives of the women of Moab. The name of the one was Orpah, and the name of the other was Ruth. And they dwelt there about 10 years. Then both Mahlon and Chilion also died. So the woman, being Naomi, survived her two sons and her husband. This book begins with the words, "In the days when the judges ruled." This takes place during the book of Judges in the Bible. That's why Ruth follows that book. This was about a 400-year period between the death of Joshua and the crowning of King Saul in 1 Samuel 9. Now, we're not given any other details of exactly when this took place during the rule of the judges or during that period of time, but we're told that it is during that period. The time of the judges was dark in Israel's history. Judges 21:25 sums it up when it says, "In those days, there was no king in Israel, and everyone did what was right in his own eyes." The period of the judges was a time of much instability. There was a lot of apostasy. There wasn't a lot of unity. It seemed chaotic. And the story begins with a famine during this period of the judges. A famine had come to Judah. And this was no small famine. It doesn't tell us how big or how strong this famine was, but it probably went on several years because Elimelech and Naomi decide, we got to get out of here. It wasn't just, hey, we're just going to move to Moab. It was, we stay here, we die, or we move to escape it. This wasn't a small famine. In their eyes, this was life or death. So they're faced with the decision, do we stay or do we go? In speculation, I've wondered, and it was just a question, was it right for Naomi and Elimelech to move? They were in Judah. They were in the promised land. They were under the shadow of God's wing. And during a hostile time, they decide to move. The book doesn't tell us whether God was pleased or displeased with that. It's only speculation, food for thought. We'll look at it later. Sometime after they move, Naomi's husband dies. Her two sons marry Moabite women, and after 10 years they die, leaving Naomi with two daughters-in-law and no grandchildren. Now let's remember that children and grandchildren are more than a joyful gift of God. In those days, they carried on the family name. Land itself was attached to family. So if all of your family died, that land goes up for sale. Children also were the welfare of parents and grandparents. They were there to help and to assist. And so Naomi's looking at this, and she's seeing her family name lost, her legacy lost, her land back in Judah is now lost because there's no one to carry on the name, and her welfare is lost. Everything seems lost forever. In a way, all she has is these two daughters-in-law that are not Jewish. They're from Moab. And so that's the situation that we have in verses 1 through 5. Now let's read on. Verses 6 to 18, this will be the longest section of reading. Then she, being Naomi, arose with her daughters-in-law that she might return from the country of Moab. For she had heard in the country of Moab that the Lord had visited his people by giving them bread. Therefore she went out from the place where she was and her two daughters-in-law with her. And they went on the way to return to the land of Judah. And Naomi said to her two daughters-in-law, "Go, return each to her mother's house. The Lord deal kindly with you as you have dealt with me and with the dead. I'm sorry, as you have dealt with the dead and with me. The Lord grant that you may find rest each in the house of her husband." In other words, a new husband. So she kissed them, and they lifted up their voices and wept. And they said to her, "Surely we will return with you and your people." But Naomi said, "Turn back, my daughters. Why would you go with me? Are there still sons in my womb that they may be your husbands? Turn back, my daughters, go, for I'm too old to have a husband. And if I should say I have hope, if I should have a husband tonight and should also bear sons, would you wait for them till they were grown? Would you restrain yourselves from having husbands? No, my daughters, for it grieves me very much for your sakes that the hand of the Lord has gone out against me." Then they lifted up their voices and wept again, and Orpah kissed her mother-in-law, but Ruth clung to her. And she said, "Look, your sister-in-law has gone back to her people and to her gods. Return after your sister-in-law." But Ruth said, "Entreat me not to leave you or turn back from following after you, for wherever you go, I will go. And wherever you lodge, I will lodge. Your people shall be my people, and your God, my God. Where you die, I will die, and there I will be buried. The Lord do so to me, and more also, if anything but death parts you and me." When she saw that she was determined to go with her, she stopped speaking to her. So verse 6 tells us that the famine had ceased in Israel, and crops were growing again. There was bread in the land, and Naomi hears this and she decides to return to Bethlehem. There's nothing keeping her in Moab anymore. And God was blessing Judah again that there was no longer death by famine. So she thinks, well, it's time to return home. Now, an interesting note, the word return occurs 12 times in chapter 1. And the word primarily means a physical return, but this could also foreshadow a spiritual return. Naomi had left, in a sense, the presence of the Lord, the land that was given to her, and she is now returning. She sets out to return with Ruth and Orpah, but along the way, she's persuaded that it would be better for them to just return to Moab. I want to read again. She says in verse 8, "Go return each to her mother's house. The Lord deal kindly with you as you have dealt with the dead and with me. The Lord grant that you may find rest each in the house of your husband." In other words, girls, just go back. Go back to your parents. Find other men to marry. Find rest in them. What changed in Naomi's mind? I mean, they started out together. She doesn't say this. When they begin, they're walking along, they're heading back to Judah, and she finally gets it in her mind, they just need to go back. I don't think she does this out of meanness. I think Naomi truly does care about her daughters-in-law. We see that from how she weeps with them, how she loves them. I think she really does care. She cares about them. But she also believes that God's hand is against her. And so it would be better for them to go back and basically stay as far away from her as possible. So it's out of love she says, just leave me. I have no hope. You still have a young life. Go live it. Go away from me. And we'll see just how this unfolded in Naomi's mind in a little bit. Ruth and Orpah both want to go with Naomi. They tell her so. No, we're going to go with you, Naomi. And then she responds again. And we really get the heart of what is going on in her soul, in her mind, in her heart. And it's really sad what Naomi's dealing with. I'm going to read this. It's verses 11 to 13. I'm going to read this out of the New Living Translation. It's a little bit different, worded a little bit different, but I think it kind of brings home the impact of what is going on with Naomi. We get an insight to what's going on with her mind, how she thinks, what she's thinking about, how she's interpreting the circumstances that have come upon her. Remember, she had a husband. He's dead. She's had two sons. They're dead. She has no grandchildren. She has no more children except these daughters-in-law. She's looking at a future that seems grim. And in the New Living Translation, it reads, "Why should you go on with me? Can I still give birth to two other sons who could grow up and be your husbands? No, my daughters, return to your parents' home, for I'm too old to marry again. And even if it were possible and I were to get married tonight and bear sons, then what? Would you wait for them to grow up and refuse to marry someone else? No, of course not, my daughters. Things are far more bitter for me than for you, because the Lord Himself has raised His fist against me." What a statement. Naomi has lost all hope of a happy future. And she believes that if Ruth and Orpah stay with her, their futures will be just as lost. She doesn't believe God is going to change this calamity into something good. She doesn't even remember that there's a kinsman redeemer, actually two kinsman redeemers back in Judah. She doesn't remember. She thinks everything's lost. God's fist is raised against me. There's nothing good in my life. She focuses on her circumstances and comes to the conclusion that God is out to judge her. Now, I'm speculating here. The text doesn't say this. So I was thinking, what is going on with Naomi's mind? So this is purely speculation. But it could be that Naomi believes that God is judging her and her family for their sins. She could believe that this is cause and effect. We have done something wrong. We've sinned. And now God has just pronounced His judgment on my life. First of all, God had sent a famine to Judah, the famine that drove them away, which they decided to run from. That famine could have been viewed as a sign of judgment against their wickedness, against even the nation's wickedness. We see this a few times in the Bible where God sends a famine because of wickedness that Israel or Judah had done. We see this in Leviticus 26, where God says, "After all this, if you do not obey me, then I will punish you seven times more for your sins, and your strength will be spent in vain, for your land shall not yield its produce, nor shall the trees of the land yield their fruit." In other words, Israel, if you disobey me, if you don't obey me in these things, I'm going to send a famine. So God did promise at times to send famine. Now, that's not the only time that He sends a famine. It's not always because of sin. It's not always because to draw people back. But there were times in Israel's history where a famine did come as a result of their sin. And so Naomi could have thought that. Oh, this famine has come and it's God's judgment. So they move. They move to a pagan nation, Moab, to escape the famine. And Israelites were supposed to be separated from pagan nations. God had given them specific land to dwell in. Here's the promised land. Don't go out of it. And they could have thought that, or Naomi could be thinking, my family and I left, Elimelech, my husband and I left with our sons, and we left Israel. We didn't trust God. And now Elimelech's dead because of it. We sinned, God slew my husband. But then what happened? My sons marry Moabite women. God had said back in Deuteronomy 7, He listed several different nations that Israel was not supposed to intermarry with. Now, Moab was not one of those nations listed back in Deuteronomy 7, but she could have interpreted and said, well, Moab may be included in that list. We've disobeyed God. My sons now marry out of Israel. They're marrying Moabite pagan women, and now they're dead. Oh, God's just judging me for my sin. She's left with nothing in her eyes. And she believes that only judgment remains in her future. That's just speculation, but I'm wondering if those thoughts are going through Naomi's mind. Some Christians agree that God was judging Naomi's family for their sins. And we do see that in other places in the Bible. Moses disobeys God by striking the rock and not speaking to it. And God says, you will not enter the promised land for your sin. Saul does not trust God as an impatient. He offers a sacrifice without Samuel being there. And God takes the kingdom away from him. David stays home instead of going to war, commits murder, adultery, and lies. And David's sons die and blood is in his house. And there are many more examples like it. So I have a question tonight. Was God judging Naomi's family? Think about it. Was all this that happened, the famine, the death of Elimelech, the death of Mahlon and Chilion, her sons, was that God's judgment upon their sin? I'm not so sure. Because the Bible also teaches that God uses calamity and bad things to work His good and purpose in people's lives. It teaches that God decrees all things for His glory and the good of His people. We see this when the disciples pass a blind man. They're walking along the road. And I have to think that this man was probably known in the city. This was probably a question that people had asked. Is this man's there? He's blind. He's been blind since birth, or blind since a young age. And the common question could have been, well, who sinned? His parents must have done something, or he must have done something to deserve this blindness. And that's exactly what they asked Jesus. They're walking along, and they say, this is just how I'm thinking of it. Oh, by the way, Jesus, this man, we've been curious. He's struck with blindness. Who sinned? What was it, his parents' sin that caused it, or was it his own sin? We're curious. What caused this calamity in his life? And Jesus' words must have astonished them when he says, it was no one's sin. This didn't happen because of their sin or his sin. It happened because God is going to display his power and love. And then Jesus gives him sight. One could say that Joseph's bragging and boasting to his brothers caused him to be sold to Egypt because his brothers were angry. I mean, Joseph is pictured in a pretty bad light in the beginning of his life. I know we sometimes think of Joseph as this awesome guy. I think he showed godliness later, but he was pretty much a bragging brat at his young age. He brags to his brothers several times and drives them to anger. But that's not how the story goes, does it? It's not pictured that Joseph's sin caused all that. It was that God ordained those things so that Joseph's family would be saved from a famine and to bring them to Egypt. That's why all that happened. Because God was going to move Joseph's family to Egypt. And he used all of that to do so. So it wasn't cause and effect. It was gracious providence. So the question still is there. I know I'm harping on this, but I think it's really important in our lives to think about these things. So in the story of Naomi, was it her sin that caused these things, or was it providence? I know providence is overarching, but you know what I'm saying. The book of Ruth doesn't give an answer to it. We're never told that so-and-so displeased the name of the Lord and he struck them. It does show, though, how the hand of God works to bring out redemption. And this is why I lean in the direction that Naomi's calamity that she was facing was not a direct result of her sin. It's how I read the narrative. Because Ruth is a picture of the gospel. Does God deal with us by cause and effect or by his grace? Is your relationship with God and how you see his providence based on your deeds or Christ? What did Jesus accomplish on the cross for you? He took away your sin in order to redeem you and adopt you. And we'll get into that more. But Naomi does believe that God is out to get her. What's interesting about Naomi is that she believes in the sovereignty of God, but has a very wrong view of God's character and his providence. She says in verse 13, "The hand of the Lord has gone out against me." In other words, everything that's happening is because of God. Well, you're right, Naomi. God is over all things. Verse 21, she says, "I went out full, and the Lord has brought me home again empty. Why do you call me Naomi, since the Lord has testified against me and the Almighty has afflicted me?" In other words, she's saying, God's sovereign. I can't help my situation. Everything that's happening is because of God. She believed in the sovereignty of God, but she didn't really believe in the God of the Bible. She was having moments of doubt. In her mind, God was a different God than he reveals in his word. So that begs a question. How do we respond when calamity happens? How do we respond when trials come our way? When we are squeezed, what comes out? Are you a hopeless and bitter Calvinist? Naomi teaches us that it's not enough to believe in the sovereignty of God, but also the character of God. Who is this sovereign God? What is his purpose and plan for our lives? Why do trials come? And I'm hitting on this because I think so many times in our lives, we get to think, if I don't do this, God won't do that. I was a horrible son. I must have horrible children. I'm probably going to have horrible children because I was a horrible son. I mistreated this person. I'm going to get mistreated. I remember talking to a couple one time, and they were talking about how they struggled with purity, if you want to use that word, during their dating. And then they're married, and they're like, is God going to bless our marriage because we really struggled? Well, that's a cause and effect thinking. We have to do this, and if I don't do this, God won't do that. Is that the God we serve? Because that's a lot of fear. That's a lot of Naomi. Who's the God that you serve? Now, I'm not saying that we don't have consequences, that if we do something, that's not going to have effects. But I am saying, at the root of it all, is God up in heaven saying, if you don't do this, I won't do that. Or if you do this, I'm going to do this. Is he a cause and effect God, or is he a God of grace? What did Jesus die for? Who is the God who's over you? Keep thinking, if Naomi could only see that Ruth was going to meet Boaz, have a child, and that child, Obed, would be the grandfather of the most famous and greatest king of Israel. If only Naomi could really see in the future and see that from Ruth and Boaz's line would come the Son of God, the everlasting king. If only Naomi had heard the words to God moves in a mysterious way. Two verses of that hymn go, "Ye fearful saints, fresh courage take. The clouds ye so much dread are big with mercy and shall break in blessings on your head. Judge not the Lord by feeble sense, but trust him for his grace. Behind a frowning providence, he hides a smiling face." Is that your God? Because this really impacts our day-to-day life, doesn't it? I don't want anyone here living by the fear of, if I don't do this, God won't do that. I've thought about that before. I've come to the Lord's Supper before going, I had a really bad week. I didn't read my Bible. I didn't really pray that much. I don't deserve to take this bread and this cup. That's a cause and effect way of thinking. The right way is to come to God and say, Lord, I've failed so many times, but your Son was perfect, and I believe in His righteousness. I believe in His atoning work. I'm going to take this bread and drink this cup as a reminder that Jesus paid it all. It's not about what I've done. It's all about what He's done. I can mess up big time, and He is still King, and He can redeem me. That's the gospel. And that's what Naomi is going to learn by chapter 4. So he looked at Naomi. Now let's look at Ruth. And this, we're not going to spend as much time on Ruth for this chapter as we did with Naomi. So don't worry. We're over halfway. But let's look at Ruth, this godly woman. In chapter 4, we're told that Ruth married Mahlon. Even after his death, she is a committed member of her husband's family. Even after the discouraging words that Naomi speaks from verses 11 to 14, we read in verse 15 that Orpah kissed her mother-in-law, but Ruth clung to her. Ruth is not leaving Naomi. We further see this when Orpah turns back and Ruth says in verses 16 to 17, I want to read these again. Here are the words of Ruth. Entreat me not to leave you or turn back from following after you. For wherever you go, I will go, and wherever you lodge, I will lodge. Your people shall be my people, and your God, my God. Where you die, I will die, and there I will be buried. The Lord do so to me, and more also, if anything but death parts you and me. What an amazing statement. Now, I don't want to rush over this, but let's take a look at the impact of these words. Remember that Naomi has basically told Ruth, if you stay with me, only judgment and calamity are in your future. Ruth, you have no hope of a husband, no hope of sons. We will be poor and our futures are grim because God has His hand against me. You stay with me, you're going to have calamity. That's basically what Naomi has told Ruth. And it was with that statement that Orpah decides not to stay, but she heeds the advice of her mother-in-law, and she returns to Moab, but Ruth stays. She is willing to face hardship. She is willing to take care of her bitter mother-in-law. Think about this for a moment. Ruth is willing to uproot and move to a different land, different surroundings, different culture, different language, different customs, and a very different religion. Don't just breeze through these words. Think about what Ruth is doing here. She's leaving everything she knows. She's leaving everything she's comfortable with to move to a new society. It would be like us uprooting and moving to a new country. It's a radical change. But Ruth also says, where you die, I will die, and there I will be buried. Ruth has no intention of moving back. She's not saying, hey, Naomi, I'll make sure that you get to Bethlehem safely. I'll at least walk with you all the way, and then I'm heading back. No, she also is not saying, I'll stay there a little bit, Naomi, but if things get kind of rough, if I don't like the culture, if I don't like the people, if you remain being this bitter mother-in-law, I'm out. I'll move back to Moab. No, she says, I will die in the land that you die, and I'm going to be buried next to you, Naomi. She even goes on to say, she promises, or she's basically swearing an oath, the Lord do so to me and more also if anything but death parts you and me. Naomi, I'm not leaving your side. God's going to have to kill me for me to leave your side. And if God takes you home first, I'm going to be buried next to you. I'm not going anywhere. Mothers, isn't that the mother or the daughter-in-law that you would like to have? Look at her commitment. Look at her love that she has for Naomi. Even in chapter 2, we're going to see that Ruth takes it upon herself to provide for her mother-in-law. But that's not the most miraculous statement, in my opinion. In my opinion, out of all of that, she says, "Your God shall be my God." Remember that Ruth is a Moabite. She was raised in a land of false gods. And it's even hinted when Naomi looks at her and says, "Your sister's returned to her family and her gods. Ruth, you should do the same. Go back to your false gods." That Ruth was once an idol worshiper. She was once a worshiper of these pagan false gods. But not anymore. She says, "Your God shall be my God." In other words, "Your God is my God, Naomi. I believe in the God of Israel." Ruth has come to believe. Orpha returned, but Ruth stays. Even in chapter 2, Boaz says this to Naomi. He says, "All that you've done for your mother-in-law since the death of your husband has been fully told to me, and how you have left father and mother in your native land and come to a people that you did not know. The Lord repay you for what you have done, and a full reward be given to you by the Lord," listen to this, "the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to take refuge." I think that's one of the driving things what brings Ruth to Judah. She wants to be under the wings of God. Not that God, you know, and his presence wasn't there in Moab, but his special dwelling place was in Judah. And I believe not only does Ruth want to take care of her mother-in-law, provide for her, she's also a committed believer of the God of Israel, and she wants to be where he's at. She wants to be in his presence. She wants to be in the land that he has given. Isn't that a picture of what God does with us? He changes our hearts. He brings us into a new family, makes us citizens of heaven. He works a desire for his will in our hearts to do those things which please him. Don't we find our peace under the shadow of his wing as well? Verse 19 says, "When Naomi saw that she was determined to go with her, she stopped speaking to her." So Ruth and Naomi return. Now let's look at the last few words. I'm almost done. 19 through 21. "Now the two of them went until they came to Bethlehem, and it happened when they had come to Bethlehem that all the city was excited because of them. And the women said, 'Is this Naomi?' But she said to them, 'Do not call me Naomi. Call me Mara, for the Almighty has dealt very bitterly with me. I went out full, and the Lord has brought me home again empty. Why do you call me Naomi, since the Lord has testified against me and the Almighty has afflicted me?'" Really ends on a bitter note, doesn't it? The women of Bethlehem are excited. Naomi's come back. "Is this Naomi? Naomi, it's great to see you." The name Naomi means pleasant. It means pleasant or sweet. And I think we need to think about that sometimes, that in the country we live in, like, my name's Stephen, but the literal translation is crowned one. But when you want to say crowned one, you don't say Stephen. Well, in this era, in this society that we're reading in, if you wanted to say pleasant, you said Naomi. So her name was Pleasant. It would be like me walking up saying, "Good morning, Pleasant." So we have to remember that, because we get a lot of what's happening here if we understand that. So I'm going to read it how it would sound. The women of the women of Bethlehem see Pleasant, and they say, "Is this Pleasant? Pleasant, you're back." And now Pleasant says, "Do not call me Pleasant. Call me Bitter," because that's what Mara means. "Don't call me Pleasant. Call me Bitter, for the Almighty has dealt very bitterly with me." We see the summation of Naomi's theology at this time in view of God with that statement. God is sovereign, but he's not pleasant to me. He's bitter. toward me. Another statement she makes in verse 21 is, I went out full, and the Lord brought me home again empty. Now I had to think, what did Ruth think with that statement? Naomi says, I've come back empty-handed. I've come back with nothing. Ruth is right there with her. How she must have felt. But we see the focus and the hopelessness of Naomi. Once again, how do we respond to God's providence? Who do we believe that God is? Is he the one who delights in making his people bitter or making them pleasant? In chapter 1, Naomi changes her name to bitter because she believes that God is bitter towards her. But in reality, God was going to restore her. She may have returned empty, but God was going to make her full through Ruth. And that's the story of redemption in this book. Naomi's future does not look good from a human perspective, but God is a redeeming God. He was going to provide the kinsman redeemer who would buy her land so it remains in the family, marry Ruth and have children, which would carry on the family name. Naomi would have a family who would provide and look after her for years to come. And that's what God has done with us in Christ. As we'll see later on, Jesus is our kinsman redeemer. In the coming chapters, we're going to really look at that. Boaz is a picture of Christ. For us reading this tonight, the Father sent Jesus into the world to redeem his people, to restore them, to bring them from emptiness into fullness. And that's the plan. You may be going through trials, you may be going through suffering. You may be even here tonight thinking, I've caused this. No. God is a redeeming God. He's using everything to make you full in Christ. That's his plan. That's what he's doing. The chapter ends with verse 22. So Naomi returned, and Ruth the Moabitess, her daughter-in-law with her, who returned from the country of Moab. Now they came to Bethlehem at the beginning of the barley harvest. Verse 22 reminds us again that Ruth is a Moabite. It's not going to let us forget that. Ruth is a Moabite. She's a pagan. She's not an Israelite. And yet God has a plan to use her to be the great-grandmother of David. This pagan woman would be named in Matthew 1, 5, when we read, Salmon begot Boaz by Rahab. More on that next time, but think about that. Boaz's possible mother. Sometimes the Bible skips generations to just highlight certain people. So I'm not sure if Boaz's parent or mother was actually Rahab, or that may have been, you know, his grandmother. But most likely it was his mom. Boaz's mom was a pagan as well. Salmon begot Boaz by Rahab. Boaz begot Obed by Ruth. She's named in the New Testament. Ruth is specifically named in the New Testament to remind us that God's grace is not just to Israel, but to the whole world. His grace extended beyond the borders of Israel. It grabbed a Moabite woman, changed her heart, brought her back, and God, in his loving plan, decided to make her part of the lineage of our King Jesus. The chapter ends with a small cliffhanger. Now they came to Bethlehem at the beginning of the barley harvest. The Reformation Study Bible says this, the season of the harvest was a time of celebration, rejoicing together before God and remembering the poor. The narrative development is tied to this scheme. The women return home at the barley harvest, a time of God's favor and the beginning of fruitful restoration for Naomi. And so in the next chapter, Ruth will go out to glean, and it will so happen that she gleans in a field belonging to Boaz. So that's scene one, or act one, of the book of Ruth. Let's pray.